Alan Ruck is a longtime actor who has been in everything from HBO's Succession to playing Cameron in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. The latter is the focus of today's conversation as Alan is taking part in this year's Moontower Comedy Festival by presenting Ferris Bueller's Day Off at the Paramount Theater on Saturday, April 13th at 3 o'clock. That's followed by a Q&A involving Alan and the audience. You can go to austintheater.org for info or to perhaps snag tickets. And it's a pleasure now to welcome Alan to the show. Alan, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
I'm fine. How you doing?
I'm great. And I don't know if you realize this or not, but this is actually the second time that you and I have a chance to chat. The first time was at South by Southwest a couple years ago when you were there in support of your wife, Mireille, and her excellent AMC show, Lucky Hank. You were just kind of standing off to the side and I was waiting for Mireille and Bob and some of the other people to pass through. And I asked if you had a few minutes and you did. It was a very pleasant conversation, so it's great to get to talk to you again, man.
I'm glad I wasn't a jerk. That's the main thing. I think that was just about a year ago.
Was it only a year? Yeah, you know what? You're right about that. It was a year ago. I was thinking a couple of years because the last four have just been a blur, but it was
jam-packed.
Yeah. Did y'all get to experience much of Austin, or was it very much an in-and-out trip for you guys that weekend?
That one was pretty quick. Mireille, years ago, I think about 9 years ago, did a pilot for ABC that was shot in Austin called The Catch.
Okay.
So we got to be there. We got to be there for, I don't know, maybe three weeks. I enjoy it. It's a great town. Man, it's gone crazy, right? It's just been built up so much so fast.
Yeah, the downtown area, all the buildings downtown, I mean, it is a landscape that seems to be changing by the month. There's like three or four massive skyscrapers being built right now. And
right.
This town has always had a sort of keep Austin weird charm, of course. That's how the slogan goes. It feels a little bit less weird, but that's inevitable with a cool place. So we just have to ensure that even if some of that mom and pop charm goes away, that the people who are moving here aren't necessarily bringing their problems with them, because this is a very open-minded place that loves its arts when it's all said and done.
Right. Yeah, I know. I enjoyed being there, and I like the vibe, to use an overused word, but I liked how I felt when I was in Austin. I felt very comfortable. Yeah.
Well, I know more than a couple of people who are excited about this Ferris Bueller screening that you are hosting on Saturday at Moontower Comedy Festival. It's at the Paramount, which is a great place to see a movie. There's going to be a Q&A afterwards as well. You've probably seen this more times than you care to admit in your life, but you've also been taking this show on the road, too. How cool is it to see a movie like this still resonate with audiences nearly 40 years later now?
I know. I think it's a testament to John Hughes. And I think it's all about the respect he had for kids. You know, a lot of teen comedies from every era just don't hold up because they were making fun of the kids, you know, for being sex crazed or, you know, whatever. I mean, just silly stuff. And, I just think John was fascinated by kids, and he honored them for being complete individuals, certainly, you know, in transition, like we all are. We're all works in progress. But I've said this before, that I think he honored their hopes and dreams and didn't write down to them or talk down to them. And I think that's why they still stand up.
So in another interview that I heard you do, you mentioned meeting Hughes for the very first time in the early 80s around the Breakfast Club. Was that because you had actually tried out for the Breakfast Club?
Yeah, I started acting in Chicago. I got there in 1979, fall of 79. And a couple of years later, you know, John had already written the Lampoon Vacation movies, and he had written the Breakfast Club early on, and he wanted to do it like a little low budget indie in Chicago. And I went in and I auditioned for Bender, which, you know, I wasn't right for. But anyway, I went in, I met him, I read for him. And then during that time, he met Molly Ringwald. And then he just, you know, she became his muse, and he put the Breakfast Club on the back burner, and he wrote 16 Candles for That Girl in a weekend. he was, I don't know that there's anybody that was faster than him in terms of screenwriting.
Didn't you say he wrote Ferris in like 7 or 10 days, something like that too?
I think it was under seven. I think it was just absolutely a week. He talked to Ned Tannen, who was running Paramount Pictures at the time. And he bounced this idea off of him, I think about Bueller. And Ned said, well, you know, show me a script. And then within a week, it was on Tannen's desk. So,
you read for Bender. You remember the, yeah. The lines that you had to read?
Oh no, man! Remember? It's 40 years ago. I don't know.
Hey, did you dig to your inner depths to find the badassness necessary to pull Bender off?
I think I did what I could, you know, but clearly it was not meant to be. It was it went another way, as they say.
And learning a little bit more about you for this conversation, Alan, I love to hear about your Chicago past. This is actually a running joke for me here in Austin, but I bring up my Chicago past all the time. I had the pleasure of living in Chicago from my early 30s until my late 30s, met my now wife then. We had our first kid there and eventually moved back to Texas, which is where I am from. But I will always cherish my time in Chicago. The city itself is amazing, obviously, but it really helped me to become comfortable in my own skin as a human being. Why does Chicago hold a soft spot in your heart?
Well, I was born and raised in Cleveland, in a suburb of Cleveland, Ohio. And Chicago is sort of like the big world-class version of all those Midwest cities of Cleveland, Detroit, Buffalo. It has a lot of that. I mean, New York is its own thing, and Los Angeles, being on the coast, it's not. I don't think they're entirely representative of sort of the United States experience. But Chicago has that Midwest vibe, but it is a big, gorgeous, world-class city. Yeah. And when I got to Chicago, I went to the University of Illinois downstate. When I got to Chicago, all of a sudden, I felt like all things were possible. Everything that city has to offer, it has a personality, just like New Orleans has a personality. New Orleans, the great food, great music, its own sort of patois, you know, its own sort of slang. Chicago's the same way. It's got this great history, fabulous food, amazing restaurants, great music. And the arts, I mean, you're talking about Austin, loving the arts. I mean, Chicago is just, it's a nurturing place. And that's what it opened up for me. Now, my wife, Mireille, started out in New York. So New York holds that same kind of magical spot for her. And maybe it's because we were young when we got to our respective places. And that's where things started to happen for us, that we have those fond memories. But Chicago is, it has a big place in my heart.
You mentioned all the different places for artistic expression. Maybe I don't even know if it's an underrated theater. I hadn't heard of it before I moved to Chicago, but the Steppenwolf is a world-class theater production. And that was part of your initiation into the acting world too, wasn't it?
Well, I showed up. Those guys are just a couple of years older than me.
Okay.
I mean, the original members. And I got to Chicago. The very first play I ever saw when I got there was a production of Waiting for Lefty, and it was the Steppenwolfers. And, you know, I was feeling pretty good about myself. I was 23 years old. I thought I knew what I was doing. And I see these guys that are just a couple of years older than me. Not only were they mind-blowingly talented, but they were charting their own course. They were just waiting for somebody to call them in for an audition. They had this company, and they were like charting their own destiny. They were making it happen. A very impressive group of people. And those guys, Gary Sinise and Terry Kinney and Jeff Perry, the three guys that started the whole thing when they were like 18, you know, they're so smart because they knew that separately they were good, they were talented, but they knew together they were amazing. You know, and that they had an incredibly deep bench. It was just one person after another who was a wonderful actor. And it's just some of the most exciting stuff I've to this day that I've seen on stage.
And you give Gary and John Malkovich a lot of credit for helping you to understand what the blueprint was for really advancing your acting career too, correct?
They really started to blow up. They started to get really, really big right about the time I got to Chicago, like in that next year. And it wasn't too long that they started taking productions to New York. And so I just saw these guys doing great work and, you know, like homegrown guys too. I mean, they weren't real Hollywood, or they weren't part of that New York scene where everybody seems to have a pedigree from Yale or Juilliard or NYU. It's just like they sprung up out of the mud, you know? And so we were all inspired. Every actor of my generation who started in Chicago, incredibly impressed and inspired by the Steppenwolf gang. And it was like, how do you do this? And they just stood up and did it. And it's like, that's how you be an actor. That's how you do it.
So with all of that being said, and just thinking about how cool a city Chicago is, and it truly is unique too. I mean, there are big cities in this country that people hold fondly, whether you're talking about a New York or a Los Angeles, a San Francisco. I think Dallas and Houston certainly have their charm. I mean, you could go down the list. Chicago is its own thing. And in my opinion, one of the top two or three as a result of the mix of big city with a sort of Midwestern niceness.
Yeah.
Does it feel pretty good all these years later to have been such an important part of a movie that still is seen as the seminal film, or in that category of seminal films of what makes Chicago so great as a city? Because you can argue that the Blues Brothers is on that list too.
Sure, yeah.
Modernized version of that. And I think a more approachable version for the average person watching that film who wants to go do some of those cool things in Chicago eventually.
Well, that, again, it's all John. It was all John Hughes. I mean, he really adored Chicago, and, you know, rightfully so. And in many ways, Bueller is a love letter to his city. But there's just, you know, what's not to like about Chicago? Well, here's one thing, the weather. That's the only thing to this day. I mean, I'm an older guy now, and I just don't want to shovel snow, and I don't want to wrap up in, you know, 100 layers just to go to the grocery store. So I'm a baby. I live in Los Angeles, and I like it. I like California. But Chicago is certainly one of the prettier cities I've ever seen. San Francisco right now is going through some things because they have an out of control homeless population. And it's not just, it's a problem for all of us in every big city.
You're not in a good place as a city when you have an online map dedicated to the largest amounts of human excrement, like what San Francisco is dealing with right now.
Yeah. But I mean, I always thought that maybe San Francisco was the prettiest American city. And it still is. We've all got this homelessness issue to deal with, and we've got to figure it out because these people really need help, and it's impacting, you know, the quality of life for everyone. So, I mean, that's a whole nother story.
Well, the hands-off approach is bad for everybody. I completely agree with you because Austin deals with a version of it as well. Just
sure.
Hearing no evil, seeing no evil by our government officials is an unacceptable quote unquote solution. Right.
Right. But, you know, San Francisco, gorgeous city, and Chicago's right up there. They years ago were very smart. They developed the whole lakefront as a park and gorgeous architecture. And then after the Great Fire of 1871, wasn't it 1871? Yeah. They started to build everything out of brick and stone. So even like the corner store, like the mom and pop store on the corner, it was built during that period of like the 1880s, a lot of these buildings, and they're just gorgeous, you know, that they're built out of brick and stone. They were made to last. So the city's got a great deal of charm, a lot of character.
Yeah. And as you'll learn, if you ever go on the architecture cruise, most of the buildings downtown have context of the buildings next to them. So there's a certain cohesiveness. One exception, of course, is the Trump Tower, which looks like a giant needle to the brain and has no context compared to anything else. Shouldn't surprise anybody knowing that now.
Yeah. Well, it was made to stick out.
Yeah. Yes, it was. I'm
Yes.
with you, by the way, on the winter. That was my only really big gripe. Well, the politicians were a little bit of a problem too, but 6 to 8 months of winter for the possibility of anywhere from 6 weeks to 2 months of summer, that trade-off no longer became worth it for me as soon as we had a kid.
Yeah.
Our freedom was going to start going downhill pretty quickly as adults anyhow, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the months of May and the month of October generally in Chicago are glorious, you know, but you're going to pay for it.
Do you have a favorite element of just what you were able to do with the Cameron character all these years later? I know you don't like watching the young version of yourself acting things out. You get very nitpicky, which is completely understandable. I hate listening to myself when I have to go back and edit conversations. So I do understand and not wanting to go do that, especially not wanting to go do that decades in the past. But is there something that sticks with you all these years later about that performance, Alan?
I guess I'm really pleased that I allowed myself to relax into it. I mean, I worked hard, I prepared, but I feel like on the day I was, I mean, what you really need to do is you plan your work, but then I had an acting teacher that said, once they say action, what you got to do is you got to jump off the diving board and see what happens. And so I think we had a fair bit of spontaneity in that movie. And I hadn't had that much movie experience, this, you know, film experience at that point, but I felt good about that. I felt like it was pretty spontaneous, and that's kind of what I'm always hoping for.
You guys were actually at the Cubs game.
Oh yeah.
So what were the circumstances surrounding the parade? Was that on Michigan? Where was that? Was there an actual parade planned, or was that Hughes just doing a great job of coordinating things?
I think that's why they decided to shoot in Chicago at that time, because there really was a German-American Day parade during the time that we were in Chicago. Hmm. And so one Saturday we were just part of the parade, and we had our own little float, and we would sneak, you know, we sort of sneak into the line of the parade, and the cameras were set up, and we'd go a couple of blocks, and then we'd duck down a side street and get back onto the end of the parade. And then, you know, and that was the whole first Saturday. And then a week later, we did all the close-ups of, all, you know, Matthew singing with the girls on the parade, all the close-ups of that. We did the scenes with Mia and I. And then a great guy named Kenny Ortega was the choreographer and second unit director. And he did all those great things with the people dancing down the steps, and, you know, construction workers dancing and, you know, panning the crowd. They did all that stuff. So it took at least 3 full days of work to film that parade sequence. Yeah.
Last Bueller question now, Alan. Have you ever been to Egypt land?
No, I have not. No, I have not.
And just a couple quick questions on Succession. Obviously, modern audiences know you from Succession. You did a phenomenal job on that show.
Thank
Such
you.
A great show. You described working on that show as addicting. What was so addicting about being a part of that cast and production over the last several years?
The writing. I mean, I think all of us are just spoiled rotten now. And I mean, there's a lot of wonderful writers out there, a lot of talented people producing great stuff. But our whole writer's room, they were all award-winning playwrights and people who had created television series and written movies in their own right. And then they were all gathered together in this room by Jesse Armstrong, and just the you knew exactly where, when you read the script, you knew exactly where your character was. You knew exactly what you were supposed to be thinking. It was just a very sort of detailed roadmap of what to do. And then the other thing is, we had an amazing cast, a bunch of talented people. We had terrific directors, and it was just a blast to watch other people do their thing. It was, the whole thing was just thrilling.
And yeah. Were you happy with how the show ended?
Yeah, I mean, I think Jesse was right. He originally thought it was just going to be a 3-season show. And then it turns out they had a little bit more story to tell. There was a rumor at one point one of our writers, Georgia Pritchett, said in an interview that the series would be at least 4, but certainly no more than 5 seasons long. And I think just because I love the people and the whole thing, I mean, you know, there's no great hardship to be on a show that everybody says is wonderful. You know, it does something for your self-esteem. So if it had been possible, sure, I would have liked another season. But I think Jesse was smart to end it when he did, and we went out on a real high note. And we didn't, you know, wind up jumping the shark in any way.
Very well said there. He is Alan Ruck. You can check out Alan here in Austin this week. You can actually hang out with him through Ferris Bueller's Day Off and a Q&A afterwards as part of Moon Tower Comedy Festival this Saturday, April 13th at 3 o'clock at the Paramount. Go to austintheater.org to snag tickets for more info. Alan, real pleasure getting to catch up with you again. Thank you so much for the time, and safe travels to and from Austin this weekend.
All right. Thanks, buddy. It's nice to see you again.
Thanks to Gentleman Jesus for the intro and outro music. Hear more of his work at gentlemanjesus.com. And thanks to you for hanging out. For more of the show and to connect on social media, visit booksonpod.com. We'll talk to you next time. Books on Pod.